back with episode 648 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I think Morpheus speaks for us all this week. Take a break, sis.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Yeah, we've been hit with a lot of not good news, but they were the people we're going to talk about were exceptional people, and we were grateful to see them practice their craft.
Indeed, and as you can probably tell, we're going to be leading this week with some sad news that I think everyone on the interwebs is well aware of, at least a few of these. And as we were discussing before we even got onto the recording tonight, we had to actually shorten the list. There were that many people that Morpheus' sister decided to take into her little arms. So yeah, this is not going to be the most pleasant of shows to go through. And believe me when I say that there are a lot of us who are really wishing that we could just go ahead and throw an explicit tag up for some of the things we want to say. I'll just go ahead and leave it with F cancer. Yes, there you go. Fill in the blank. But all right, we're going to go ahead and lead off with probably the one that, or at least one of the biggest pieces of news in quite some time in the music industry. Edmund, take it away. There's no article for this one. We're just going to wing this one.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. But we're going to start off with the passing at the beginning of the week of David Bowie. Born David Jones, of course, which is one of the reasons why he changed his name. There was that little monkey, Davy Jones, running around at the time he was starting his career. This was quite a shock, both in terms of him having just released that what is now his final album, Black Star, on the Friday on his 69th birthday, and then to be met with the news on Monday morning of his passing. Of course, one of the great innovators of music in the last 50 years or so. There have been, of course, been many tributes, many comments made, but I think one of the ones that really stuck with me was somebody I saw commenting that he was often called a chameleon, and they kind of called people out for that, saying, you know, no, the whole thing about chameleons try to blend in with their surroundings. What Bowie was always doing was trying to set himself apart from his surroundings, and did it quite brilliantly through all of those various incarnations, from Ziggy to the Thin White Duke, to his later collaborations with Tin Machine, and then even up to this final album, where he was basically jamming with a jazz group that was usually a quartet, naturally with the addition of his guitar and some other musicians coming in, was a quintet most of the time. I had actually not gotten my hands on the album until after I heard the news, and it's quite an extraordinary piece of work, since we now know that yes, he was basically struggling with cancer for the last 18 months, so knew this was going to be his swan song, and certainly the song Lazarus in the video makes that quite explicit, so it was in addition to all of his other music that I was revisiting throughout the week, it was quite a powerful send off, and I would actually put it up there akin to Warren Zevon's The Wind, in terms of extraordinary albums made when an extraordinary artist knew his time was limited and used it very well to send us his final works. But John, I know you were a big fan as well. What would you like to add?
I'll second the notion that Black Star was one of, if you didn't know that was kind of his epitaph, you probably would have figured it out soon enough. I mean, it's definitely a powerful work in and of itself, and to come out as timed as it was, and I do believe that since then they have said that there was a degree of knowing. Or, you know, they knew that there was a certain reason why they picked the date that they did to send it out. So, it is a powerful album, especially in retrospect. But, so many incarnations that kind of informed over the years the soundtrack of our lives, right? And as you said, he was the kind of artist that would always go against the grain and yet somehow redefine things at the same time. I think that there are a lot of people that didn't necessarily take to all of his various incarnations and musical styles, but I do feel like it was one of those instances where you couldn't ignore what he put out. You had to at least pay attention and see, even if you had a negative opinion of it at the end of the day, you weren't going to ignore him. and he had to get credit for being bold just about every time that he set forth on the stage and set forth in the recording studio. So, yeah, it was a big shock. And that's not even talking about his acting career, which mm-hmm. also had a number of highlights. I mean, in the geek arena alone, look at how many people have been referencing Labyrinth this week. I mean, every single year at every single con, there's at least one Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
Or Jareth, depending on who it is. But anyway, you've got you've got a lot of people who remember him fondly from that. You've got people who remember him from The Hunger. And certainly even there are some fans that were kind of wishing he could show up in the Twin Peaks revival and maybe explain what the heck he was doing in Firewalk with Me. But I guess that's not going to happen now. So
yeah, I mean,
somehow snuck him in.
On the movie front, I do also have to chime in with the Man Who Fell to Earth, which
yes.
from you know, was an extraordinary collaboration of a wonderful novel by Walter Tevis, directed by Nicholas Rogue, and Bowie at the very beginning of his acting career, but just showing right out of the gate that no, this wasn't just a case of stunt casting. Yeah, let's get that guy who did Ziggy Stardust to play an alien. It was it's a quite astonishing performance and film and. A very interesting take on how an alien might actually be received and what might happen to him as he gets caught up in the politics and economics of Earth. But as you say, John, I mean, all the way through, I mean, he did some astonishing work on stage as particularly as the Elephant Man, and even more recently was as Nikola Tesla in The Prestige was one of those smaller roles he played, but that just he brought great gravitas to, and you know, certainly very, very appropriate casting of one innovator playing another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once again, we're kind of leading off here with the one that probably hit people pretty the hardest from a musical point of view. And unfortunately, that's not the biggest luminary out there, or at least there's someone who is probably equally mourned at this point this week, as we have. We have to talk a little bit about the loss of Alan Rickman. And yeah, as I'm sure you can imagine, who have been listening to the show for a while, this one was a stunning turn of events for me, certainly. And I think for anybody who was a fan of Harry Potter or Die Hard or Galaxy Quest or any of those films, I mean, he was pretty much in every type of movie that you could think of. Also 69 years old, also dying of cancer. That this would have been, I suppose, Thursday morning out of nowhere, but yes, apparently surrounded by family and friends, he was rose to fame as Hans Gruber in Die Hard. That film went on to play the sheriff in Robin Hood Prince of Thieves. Everyone remembers the line with the spoon. And then he went on to become Professor Severus Snape, who of course as I said many people know is one of my favorite characters pretty much ever, and certainly my favorite in the Harry Potter series and films. I loved his portrayal, and it's kind of something that has been a bit of a touchstone with my family, with my children, who have kind of also identified with that character, at least as far as their dad is concerned. So it's definitely a big loss. I wouldn't say that it's quite on the level of a Leonard Nimoy, but it certainly is one that everyone here in the household took very hard. But for those who, you know, perhaps remember him from Dogma, where he played Metatron,
That's where I felt like I really got to see him act. You know, he was Hans Gruber, and he played the sort of, you know, mustache-twisting bad guy. But that was the first time that I felt him sort of stretch out and really, you know, you really got a sense of what he could put on the screen.
Mm-hmm. And then he was also in Truly Madly Deeply. He was in Sense and Sensibility. He was in, let's see. Was he in... Love Actually. I'm sure there's a lot of people who remember
yes.
him from that.
Yes, he was.
Yes, and I'm just going down the list here. There's a ton. And certainly, like I said, Galaxy Quest was one that many in the geek community would remember him by and have been remembering him by all the last few days. Let's just put it this way. I'm staring right now at my avatars on Yahoo, and right next to my picture is the name Severus. What does that tell you guys? This one cut pretty deep.
Yeah.
Did you know what age he started acting at?
You know, I've heard a lot of different things. I've heard 40 something. I think 46 is the one that sticks to memory the most, but then I've heard other things as well. But that's when he really kind of came onto the stage.
Definitely much later in life. So you hear about people that have been acting for 50, 60 years, and some of them don't get quite the accolades that he's managed to gather in half that time. So it's quite an impressive career.
Oh, he's certainly never going to be forgotten. I mean, there's, like I said, an entire generation that he was one of the key characters in the books that defined their generation, for that matter. So, yeah, it's going to be hard rewatching those films after this, you know? How about you guys? Anything you want to add to that? I know, Gary, you've been kind of adding to it, but...
Yeah, I did... one nice remembrance I saw was several people got together at Universal Studios in Orlando in the Harry Potter section, and I believe it was somewhere close to 100 people, you know, all had wands and raised them in his honor. That was nice.
Yes, indeed. Scene right out of the books, or rather, well, the books and the film, but the film, it was for Dumbledore, of course, but now for, for Snape, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in with I do believe some of that stuff about how late in life he started. Yeah, well, was a little apocryphal. He didn't start out as an actor, but I think certainly he was certainly in his late 20s to 30s when he did get started on stage. Obviously, his film work came later, but I always found it a little ironic that he was absolutely brilliant in the original stage productions of Les Liaisons Dangereuses, Dangerous Liaisons. Did it in London, did it on Broadway, but at the time they were making the film, of course he wasn't a film star yet, so they got John Malkovich to do it instead, and I have always wished that his performance could have been on screen as well as on stage. I believe that the London production was filmed, so it is possible to see some of what he did, but it was a deliciously evil performance, as he went on to do so many times, certainly with Gruber and with Snape. There's even a film that is one of my favorites for taking a subject that is completely abhorrent to some people, actually involves incest, but it's called Close My Eyes, and he plays the husband of one of the sister in the relationship, and it's the performances from him and Clive Owen and Saskia Reeves in that movie actually take that very troublesome subject and actually manage to present it in a way that's at least understandable and sympathetic. Not that it doesn't make you cringe at times, but it's one of the most fascinating performances I have ever seen. For as the husband who has hints of what's going on, but manages to navigate it. So one of those that very few people have heard of. It was actually written and directed by Stephen Polyakov, who's quite well known in England for his TV and theater work, and has just made a few films, but an obscure, memorable performance of his.
Hmm. Yeah, so, that's another rough one. And we've had a few in recent memory. But unfortunately, our list is not over.
Yes.
Edmund?
This one, speaking of the theater world, this was Brian Bedford, the British-born actor, but who was known very much for his work up at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival in Canada. He also died of cancer. He at least was 80, but he has had quite an extraordinary career. Was at theater school with Alan Bates and Albert Finney and Peter O'Toole, part of that generation, protege of Gielgud, appeared all over the English speaking world. I mean, in his native England, in the U.S., had a number of Broadway productions, and I know Tony nominations, which he did win one in 71 for playing Arnulf in Molière's School for Wives. As it mentions, he actually managed to win that one against Gielgud and Ralph Richardson, who were also nominated that year. A grand old man of the theater who will be missed.
Yes, indeed. we still have more on the list, Gary.
And while this one might not quite have the gravitas that some of our earlier ones did, it still was a fond thing for a lot of people. Just that I was just about at the edge of my age, and perhaps some of our listeners who might be a little bit older. Dan Haggerty, who played Grizzly Adams in the 1970s TV series, also passed on. He was a fixture on not just that, but he had started to make several guest appearances over the years, also on shows like Chips and the original Charlie's Angels. He recently took ill and passed at the age of 74. They didn't mention what, but I suppose that's not really that important. One side note, for a little smirk and for people who knew the guy and the character, he was actually friends with the owner of the Bunny Ranch out in Nevada, Dennis Hoff, who says he'd been a close friend for over 20 years, and he loved to hang out at the Bunny Ranch. So must have been quite a fun guy to have a drink with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a certain generation that remembers him, that's for sure. But, yeah, again, somebody that a lot of people, I would say that he was beloved by a number of people, so worth putting on the list. And then finally we have one here that is definitely has certain geek connections. Edmund, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, this was the passing of Robert Banks Stewart. Not a household name necessarily, but a writer famous for creating the Zygons in Doctor Who. Actually, basically wrote just two of the adventures for the Fourth Doctor, but two very, very well known and well remembered ones, Terror of the Zygons and The Seeds of Doom. Also created numerous English TV shows, the most famous of which was Bergerac, which ran in throughout the 80s and was a tale of a very suave cop on the Isle of Jersey off of the English Channel. But he also wrote episodes of many of those iconic series from the 60s and 70s, Danger Man, The Avengers, Callan with Edward Woodward, and The Sweeney, and was a producer as well, such shows as The Darling Buds of Men and Lovejoy, which some people may remember ran constantly on A&E back in the 90s. He had been fading in recent years, I did read, been in assisted living, a couple of the accounts from his friends and colleagues, he was one of those wonderfully modest Englishmen who really didn't understand why people were still paying attention to him. So he'd probably hate that I'm even saying this right now, but we are still very, very sad to see him go.
Yes, and I think that one of the things to once again bring up here is that all of these people we've talked about, they all died of cancer, if I recall correctly. So, yeah, it's not been a great week for as far as that's concerned. And quite a few, as I said, this is the top of the list, I guess, that I had written up. And there were a few others that we could put on there. And I believe even they all died of cancer. And there are quite a few people that I know who have lost some folks to that affliction, some very close people. And there are some folks that I know out there listening that are right now struggling with the fact that they have loved ones that are fighting cancer. And so, once again, big middle fingers up and an F cancer to the universe. So there we go. I will try to maintain the non-explicit tag if possible, but I think we all share that sentiment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think what we're going to do is take a little bit of a break as we maybe make sure that we're a little more composed, and then we're going to move on to the news from the past week. So stay tuned.
Shows you can always change, no matter the way or mistake you've made. Sometimes consequences define your life with hardship. Will goodness be the banner you raise? 'Cause with his last breath, Severus said, take it, take it. Not afraid of what he had to do.
Severus. You were named for two headmasters of Hogwarts. One of them was a Slytherin, and he was probably the bravest man I ever knew. A sallow-skinned Slytherin with long black hair. I hated him and he seemed to hate me too. Though I branded him a coward, he was, in fact, the bravest man I ever knew.
A true wizard on the inside. On the inside. In one word, always, always.
All right, and we are back, and hopefully with a little bit better news than what we've just been talking about. I don't think there's any way to go any lower than that. So let's maybe go ahead and start with some news from NBC. And this isn't necessarily that much better for people who were fans, but. Yeah, apparently Heroes Reborn has been recanceled.
It's like deja vu all over again.
It is. It is.
Except I'm not as invested this time.
I don't think too many people were invested by the time it left the first time.
Well, you know, it is timey-wimey, but doesn't necessarily do it as well as that other guy.
No, not really at all. But, you know, there are some people that were upset over on our Facebook page. We had a comment that said that they were actually hoping for season 6. And then Andy Spencer, one of our former review writers back in the day, says we'll always have season 1. And in which case that was comment. Yeah, that's about all that I'm willing to still recall. But then also they were saying that seasons 2 and 4 will be favorites. Okay. And then someone else said they forgot it was on. Well, it's all your fault. No, really. There are a lot of people who chose to forget that it was on because it just was not bringing it to nearly as much as people were hoping that it would.
No.
So, unfortunately, it has been canceled, and it will be going as of its final episode on January the 21st. So there we are. However, good news for some folks out there coming out of the Fox Network as they are confirming at the Television Critics Association meeting going on right now with the last couple days that, yes, Prison Break will be coming back for an event series. No talk or word of how many episodes will be coming, but it's clear that the popularity of the show on streaming services is one of the reasons that it's coming back. So,
oh, yes, good. Well, at least one network is paying attention to that. Sorry. Yeah, I'll try and make that my last slam CBS for person of interest comment of the week, but I can't make any promises.
If I cannot slam CBS today, then neither can you.
Oh, well, you might get your opportunity later. But yeah, it's going to be coming back. It's actually supposed to be bringing back the stars of the original run, Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell, despite the fact that they are so invested right now in the DCW.
Hmm.
Gave you that one, Bronze Thumb. That reference right there. But it's going to be interesting because, well, I guess that's going to ignore the direct to Blu-ray thing that went out, or the very end of the series, because I do believe that one of those characters didn't make it. Spoilers. But it supposedly is picking up several years after the last season of the show, so the brothers will be back. It's saying right here that it's a 10-episode arc, but who knows if that's the final version or not, or the final number. But yeah, I guess they're going to have to kind of revise or pick something in the middle there that, as far as some kind of time frame. I'm not sure how they're going to pull that off. The main character was kind of dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay, he was only mostly dead. He's feeling much better now. Going to apparently have to take a hiatus for a little bit from The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow, but hey, we'll see how it goes. All right, but that's not the only news coming out of Fox these days.
Yes, they have also now apparently made it official that the spinoff from 24 is in fact greenlit. This will be 24: Legacy. Is not expected, apparently will not be featuring any returning cast. Jack Bauer apparently might come back just to make a cameo, and I guess sort of set things up. But no, this does seem to scotch any possibility of Yvonne Strahovski's character getting revived, which I know a lot of us were thinking would be a very good idea. I did see here, where was it? It's going to center on a new 20-something male terrorist hunter who will work alongside an older female agent who will not be Yvonne Strahovski's Kate. That is about as much as they're letting loose for now. It does seem a little bit up in the air, even though the Live Another Day was the surprise ratings hit that it was. I think that's partially because they were bringing the Jack Bauer and the old cast members back. I'm not quite sure how it will do with an all new cast. It kind of brings to mind Spooks / MI5 also tried to do a spinoff with sort of a younger, hipper crew that really just crashed and burned while the original series continued on for a few more seasons and even a recent movie. But not to give Fox any ideas about other things they might do or have talked about in the past. But
I'm honestly not all that upset by this news because I expected them to bring it back. And I was kind of worried that they would try to bring Jack Bauer back again when they really finished his story perfectly fine.
Yeah.
There's no need for him to come back. Just let it go. I won't start singing. Don't worry.
Thank you, John.
Hey. All right. But the there are some people who want to hear me sing.
No, John.
All right, then. I've said many times that it was 24 was really a kind of a three-act story. And they finished that with Live Another Day. There was really no reason for them to extend the story beyond that. But 24 as a concept really has legs, I think, and they should probably try to do more with it. We'll see how well they succeed. But I'd like to see more of it. And at least make a go of it. You know, I mean, it's worth trying. Maybe. All right, moving on then. What's next on the list? It's probably mine, isn't it?
No, it's Gary.
Yes, it is, and I am thrilled to hear this news, and I can't wait to share it with everybody because the little fanboy, comic boy, geek in me squealed with excitement when I heard this. what I'm talking about is some news about the upcoming CW Legends of Tomorrow series. The main writers and executive producer, Mark Guggenheim, said, "Ever since we decided that Legends would involve time travel, we were eager to do a story set in the Old West. And if you're going to do the Old West in the DC universe, there's only one character that it can include, and that is Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex is a disillusioned Confederate officer, soldier. It varies sometimes by the story, but regardless, ex-Confederate who headed out west after the Civil War had ended because he was disillusioned with pretty much everything and just wanted to live out his life in peace. And something always came up, and he always felt the need to help. He might have complained about it, but he did always help. He's had a variety of series stop and start over the last 30 to 40 years. One was even set in the future at one point. And my personal favorite loop where he got to see his own stuffed body after he died, even though he wasn't dead. But you'll have to follow the comic books. It's too long a story to get into here. But regardless, I'm really thrilled about it. He's a very unique character. He was a bounty hunter as he headed out west, so he would hunt people down. And I'm not sure exactly how they're going to angle this around, but I am looking forward to it. I'm hoping for a much better showing than in the Jonah Hex film that Josh Brolin starred in, because I don't really feel that he captured the character properly. So I'm looking forward to this. And not only am I looking forward to this for Jonah Hex, but if they're willing to go into characters like a Jonah Hex, who definitely is not a popularly known character, I can only imagine what other characters they're going to be pulling out of comic book legend to throw into this, into the storyline. And so that gets me even more excited, because I'll get to see more announcements like this.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing what kind of other things, like you said, they're going to pull in through Legends of Tomorrow. It seems like a pretty well-positioned series to allow for really just about anybody to come into play and kind of explore the possibility of adding them to the list. I mean, there's other time slots, right, that clearly the DCW can take over, right? I mean, it's...
Are you saying time slots on TV or time slots in their time travel?
Both.
Oh, okay. But, both. Oh, yeah. And, you know, some people like to think of time travel as, in this case, going back to the Old West or going into the far future. But, you know, sometimes it's fun just to jump back like 10 years or 15 years, you know, at the introduction, maybe like the introduction, well, they won't say Superman. We won't use Superman, but just, you know, as the introduction of a hero that's already well established, or, you know, or at the end of a hero's sort of where a hero might die or something like that. So it doesn't always have to be 50 to 100 years in the past. Sometimes it can be a lot closer and still make for a compelling story.
Mm-hmm. This is true. All right, let's see. Now we're going to move over to Cable, and we've got a little bit of news about the Twin Peaks revival. That's right. According to the Showtime CEO, it's going to be premiering in the first half of 2017. Now, that's not so bad, because it was delayed from sometime in 2016, so it could have been any time next year, but it's going to be the first half, so that at least brings it down a little bit. But, you know, apparently the production is about halfway through, at least the principal photography anyway, and the president of Showtime has seen 25 minutes of cut scenes, shown selections and bits. Not an entire assembled episode, but that's because Lynch is going to wait until everything's filmed and then create the final episode, so that would be rather unexpected. But it does give a feel for where things are going, and apparently it's supposed to be really good stuff already. Honestly, that I like this idea that, no, they're not even trying to give David Lynch notes after everything that happened. No, just let him do his thing. just give us something. We'll air it. And whatever it is, we probably won't understand it anyway. So just go ahead and put it on.
Just make it airable, and we're good.
Not even that. Just put it out there. We'll figure it out later. It's David Lynch. So the fans will piece it together on their own. Mm-hmm. It's really good. So, yeah, I know that I, for one, am definitely looking forward to this. I have a lot of friends that are chomping at the bit. Yeah, this one is definitely one of those shows that looms large in the in my personal canon. So, yeah, it's going to be... a lot of fun to go back to it. I'm really hoping that this isn't one of those situations where you should have left it alone.
I know. I'm so anxious about that. You know, I don't want to call it, you know, a holy grail or anything, but it definitely, you know, sits up there on the shelf of all-time unique favorites. And I was like, oh, please don't break it, please.
Well, I have to say, there was enough that went wrong in the second season. And I'm an apologist of this show, and even I'll say that there are things that went wrong in the second season that whatever they bring back can't... I can't imagine that it's going to be any more questionable than some of those choices. So just, you know what, throw it out there. I'm sure I'll enjoy it. I mean, I can watch just about any David Lynch movie there is. So even the ones I really, really don't understand, it doesn't matter. They're fun. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I really would love to see it soon. So the fact that it's going to be the first half of 2017 is good news as far as I'm concerned. All right. Yeah. Next on the list here, movie news, Gary.
Oh, yes. What do we have? Oh, this is an interesting one. This is an, gosh, I don't even know how to approach this. Let me think for a second. Jeez, it's not really a reboot, but
no.
It's new. I'll read it the way it's presented. The film The Silver Chair is going to reboot the Chronicles of Narnia films. In 2010, the Chronicles of Narnia films with the Voyage of the Dawn Trader crashed and burned and sunk. It did not go over well. People sort of lost their way, and even diehard C.S. Lewis fans really weren't anxious for another movie. But hold off. You know, they've given it a few years to give it a little bit of a rest. And while they're calling it a reboot, it is going to actually continue the part of the storyline of Eustace Scrub that is a sort of sequel to The Dawn Trader. However, they are recasting every single role. So if you've loved any of the actors previously, you can still love them on DVD, but you won't be seeing new footage from them.
Okay. I'm sure there are some roles that people will be a little bit upset that they've been recast, but honestly, most of the main characters at this point have moved on in the story. So is it really a reboot? I mean, it's more like a, hey, we're following continuity, therefore it's going to feel like a little bit of a reboot.
That's true. I believe there's only the sort of the main actor going forward that is actually being recast, the Eustace Scrub.
Yeah.
I think they're using that term to isolate themselves from the result of Voyage of the Dawn Trader or its poor results that it found. So,
yeah, that's understandable. I mean, I when you watch the film, it's perfectly fine, I think, but I do feel like it was a flop to in many respects from in terms of what the industry feels and certainly the studio. So it makes sense to kind of go in with a fresh take on it, but still not rehash the three films that are out there. That would be the real mistake. We don't need another Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, honestly.
Honestly, the first few films were actually very strong, which is how they got to the Voyage of the Dawn Trader.
Yes, exactly.
So, take it for what it's worth. If you enjoy the story, and it's a good story, it might be worth taking a look at, even if you won't have quite the same faces on the screen.
Indeed. All right, and then here's some news that I did not see coming because no one did.
Yes. Yeah, this was anybody who was went to see the Michael Bay film 13 Hours about Benghazi got a bit of a shock, having nothing to do with the film, but when they saw a trailer for a movie coming out of Bad Robot Productions from J.J. Abrams, it's going to be out in less than 2 months in March, and it's called 10 Cloverfield Lane. Yes, the reference to Cloverfield is no mistake. Again, sort of playing around with terminology. It's not really a sequel, but apparently a blood relative of Cloverfield. Presumably sort of in the same sort of universe as Cloverfield, but not going to be found footage this time. They were just keeping it all under wraps. Actually, it was one of those cases of even using a fake name when they were referring to it previously, as calling it Valencia, so that people wouldn't hear Cloverfield and start putting two and two together. Looks like an interesting cast. You've got John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and John Gallagher Jr. The trailer showed them holed up in some sort of shelter with a terrifying menace trying to get in. So, perhaps not found footage, but certainly sounds like a bit of a bottle episode type of film in terms of being very claustrophobic and hopefully scary as well.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, actually. I'm probably one of those rare people out there who actually enjoyed Cloverfield and was kind of hoping that there would be more to it. But I'm glad that this is going to happen. Yay. Yay, yay. All right, and that means that we can move on to casting news. My God, that was the most perfect one we've had in a long time.
That was a good one. Yeah, very good.
Yes.
Perfect, yes. Yeah, your bell skills are coming along. Yeah.
If that's Edmund's skills.
Yes.
Oh, he's ringing in the new year then. All right.
Yes, that's right. You just focus on that first casting news bit.
I sure will, Ed. To be honest, I was not even aware that this project had made it this far along, but obviously it has. What I'm talking about is the new introduction of Robin Hood Origins. Academy Award winner, and I didn't realize that either, Jamie Foxx will be playing Little John in this latest version of Robin Hood. According to the plot synopsis, Foxx's Little John character is a battle-hardened veteran of the Crusades who starts out not trusting young Robin Hood, as they fought on different sides, but eventually he warms up to the hero. And just in case you're wondering, will this be a tongue-in-cheek version of Robin Hood? No, it won't. In this gritty retake, Robin forms a band of outlaws to deliver vigilante justice to Sherwood Forest. So we won't be singing any songs this time around. So if you hear an arrow going, duck.
Yes, indeed, indeed. All right. Well, we also have news coming out of Netflix. This is some interesting casting. We have Neil Patrick Harris joining A Series of Unfortunate Events in the lead role. That's right. He is going to be Count Olaf, the uncle, the evil uncle of series protagonists Violet Klaus and Sonny Baudelaire.
Baudelaire.
Yeah. Baudelaire, whatever.
Ding.
Yeah, yeah. All right. He's going to be kind of taking up the role that Jim Carrey played in the film adaptation about 10 years ago. So yes, this is the book series written and narrated by the fictional Lemony Snicket and follows the adventures, trials, and tribulations of the orphan children as they try to uncover the secret of their parents' deaths. So happy-go-lucky material. It's actually kind of whimsically put together, I guess you could say. But there we are. Let's see. Gary, you have the next one.
I sure do. This is an announcement about the Wonder Woman movie. They have finally cast Wonder Woman's mother, Hippolyta. Connie Nielsen will be playing Diana's mother in the role. You might have she's been recently been in another period piece. Well, not too recently, but she played Queen Lucilla in the Gladiator movie, and she'll be playing royalty once again. I guess she's shown she's quite the right actress for the for this sort of Greek period piece kind of thing. So. We don't have any other information on storyline besides, of course, Gal Gadot being cast as Diana Prince and Captain Kirk, Chris Pine being cast as Steve Trevor. And they are having a female director, Patty Jenkins, and it's planned to open up in June of 2017. So I'm assuming filming has not quite yet begun.
Hmm. So there we are. Yes, it's good to know that Hippolyta has been cast. Edmund, you have the next one. Oh, this is good. The only good thing about this, but it's good.
Yes, indeed. Although that, we might need to expand that protective circle people have been talking about after the news at the top of the show to include Tim Curry, who has now joined the Rocky Horror Picture Show remake. But no, he will not be reprising his role as Frankenfurter. He will instead be coming on board as the criminologist narrator, which I think sounds like a fabulous bit of casting and a wonderful throwback to the original wonderful film.
Hmm. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I mean, this is much better news than stuff like Adam Lambert being cast as Meatloaf was in. Yes. It's Eddie.
Meatloaf for dinner again? Yes. Sorry. Yeah, oh, I haven't warned about spoilers yet, have I? Well, anyway.
Hmm. Really? Spoilers. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, I feel like that's the only thing, and I don't know what convinced him to go back for it, but there we are. Something to at least give those of us who kind of hold... I don't know how to put it. I was going to say hold it in esteem. That's the wrong way to put it completely. It holds a special place in our hearts.
Yes.
In that little deviant corner that we love to nurture every so often. Like about half of what's on our watch list every single week. Let's see. This final bit of casting news is pretty much a confirmation of what everybody thought was happening, and that is that Idris Elba is going to be playing the role of Roland Deschain in the Dark Tower adaptation.
Excuse me, isn't that Sir? Or
Sir Idris Elba?
Didn't he receive a letter? Letters?
I don't know, but it doesn't say.
It's holiday season? Oh, okay.
So maybe they missed that. That's possible, which would be funny since it's on the Lawyer Herald. But anyway, you think they'd get those little details correct. Whatever the case may be, hopefully he's been knighted because he probably deserves it. Yes, the Dark Tower is going to be coming along from writer and producer Akiva Goldsman. And yes, Stephen King is apparently really happy with this casting, as are many people. And I think that a lot of people are very happy about it. I'm not going to say much more about it because, unfortunately, I don't know these novels as well as I probably should. I'm not the biggest fan of Stephen King's writing style, so it's a little bit hard for me to get into his books. And although this is a series that I've been told I really, really want to read because of the symbolism that's in it, it's just one that I haven't gotten to quite yet. Are any of you guys familiar with the Dark Tower series?
I'm afraid I'm not, because I'm have been similarly flummoxed by Stephen King over the years. So
yes, but it's been longer than I really care to admit since I've cracked one of those books open. I'm well a decade plus since I've read any of it on it. So.
Well, I will admit to this much, for those who want to really know how old I am. I cracked open a paperback copy of The Gunslinger, the very first book that had been on the shelves for quite a while when I was in high school. And couldn't do it. Just could not do it. That's how long I've been trying to get into the writing enough to make it. I don't know. At some point, I will probably be able to do so. But there we are. And what's this now? I guess some news coming from... I can't read that. But anyway. Yes, that was it for the casting news. And Gary, was there something that... yes. I guess that, he announced that he will be getting the getting nominated. Is that...
And unfortunately, Skype just managed to completely garble what you just said, but I believe you were trying to tell us that Idris Elba was, in fact, awarded an OBE in the Christmas honors just last month. So.
Well, there you go. That's what I was trying to say. Yes, yes. Thank you. Whether or not anyone who's listening is another thing entirely. All right, well, that is it for this particular episode. Unfortunately, it's been a little bit of a dark one for all of us, but... yeah, I think that now that we've gotten that out of our system, we can hopefully move on to bigger and better things. And next time, we'll be getting into this week's episodic discussion. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.